From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Hey, this is a big week. We're excited this week because we have the canonization of the two young Italian saints, Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati. This is a big moment in our Catholic Church, and I think that many people have been waiting a long time. I was there in April myself for the canonization of Carlo Acutis, and of course that didn't quite happen when Pope Francis passed away, and I went to his funeral instead. And you can't have a canonization without a pope, and so they postponed it. And everybody thought that that would be rescheduled for August, and I scheduled a pilgrimage in August to be there for the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati. And it was a wonderful time. I went to Milan and Turin and Florence and Rome, and I had hoped to attend the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati, but 0 for 2 on canonizations this year. And Pope Leo, our new pope, has moved that canonization to September 7th. And that is the celebration of the two young Italian saints. So it's an exciting day for a lot of Catholics around the world who have a devotion to them and their great work. And we're so excited today to be joined by Christine Wohar from Frassati USA, talking to us about Pier Giorgio Frassati. And later in the show, we'll be talking about a brand new film that's out. It's called Light of the World. It's an animated film about the life of Christ. And that'll be Brennan McPherson, the producer, who joins us to talk about Light of the World. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the might-be saint of the day, like we always do. And for today's date, September 6th, we've got Blessed Olinto Marella from Italy, who lived from 1862 to 2013. And the 365 Days with Mary Project looks at the icon of the Mother of God of St. Peter from Moscow in Russia in the 14th century. And the question of the week, it's an interesting one. If a blood relative of a future saint receives a miracle, can that be used in the canonization of that future saint? I'll do my best to answer that one. And the miracle of the day, it's a miracle of St. Michael the Archangel in the Orthodox Church in the 4th century. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week, where we look at the miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And there was a discovery in the Egyptian desert that offered a significant glimpse into the rise of Christianity, and it sheds light on a significant era in the history of Christianity. So it's a rare mural of Jesus Christ dating back more than 1,500 years. Two Christian churches have been discovered in the Egyptian desert. And the churches were unearthed at Karg Oasis, approximately 350 miles southwest of Cairo, in the country's western desert. And researchers have hailed this find as a crucial insight into the rise of Christianity in Egypt. And they announced the discovery at the end of last month, and the Egyptian Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities said an entire settlement had been found at that site. And numerous dwellings made of mud brick were uncovered, with some walls still seen covered with some plaster. And ovens and large clay jars set in the ground for storing food were also found, alongside pottery shards, vessels, glass and stone pieces, and several burials. But the most important discovery were the two churches dating back to the Coptic era, which began in the 4th century AD and was characterized by the rise of Christianity. So that's today's miracle news of the day, a new discovery related to a mosaic of Jesus from the 4th century. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week, where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. And people can write in to questions@miraclehunter.com, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page of miraclehunter.com. Now, last week, we asked the question, which immediate family has the most saints, blessed, venerables, or servants of God? And the Basil Amelia family was the answer, which is a tough one to come up with. It's Saint Macrina, the elder, was the grandmother. She's a saint. The children of Saint Amelia is the mother, and the children of Amelia and Basil the elder, 10 children, 6 of whom were saints. I kind of feel bad for the other 4 who weren't saints. And then there was St. Gregory of Nyssa, St. Peter of Sebaste, St. Naucratius, and another daughter, St. Theosebia, who is a deaconess saint. And this is considered to be the saintliest family ever, you might say, with quite a showing there. But we'd also accept the answer, the Martin family, of course, related to St. Therese of Lisieux. She's a modern example of a family recognized almost in full. You have St. Louis Martin, the father, St. Zélie Martin, the mother, their daughter, St. Therese, and Blessed Léonie, and servant of God, Céline Martin. And so that's a pretty saintly family as well. So we'd accept either of those answers. But thanks to everyone who wrote in for that one. And the question is for this week, related to the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati and Carlo Acutis. Who was the last Italian male to be canonized? Again, who was the last Italian male to be canonized? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and we'll see if you have the right answers. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page of miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Brennan McPherson, the producer of the brand new children's film, Light of the World. Stay with us for that.
Back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love when films come out and bring the faith to audiences far and wide, and especially younger audiences, because it's important that we spread the faith to everyone. And there's a brand new film that comes out that retells the life of Christ in a whole new way. It's an animated retelling of Jesus, and it's his ministry, his death, his resurrection, and it's told through the eyes of his young disciple, St. John. And it's a beautifully done film, and the graphics and the visuals are striking, and I think young people far and wide are going to enjoy this one. We're so excited today to be joined by one of the producers of the film, and that's Brennan McPherson. Welcome to the program today, Brennan.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here with you.
It's great to have you on, and talk a little bit about what inspired this film. Why now? Why another animated film related to Jesus?
Well, I mean, first of all, we started work on this film about 4 years ago, and when we started, there were no other productions that we knew of that were trying to do this. So, you know, obviously King of Kings came out earlier this year, and we became aware of that in like the last year of our development of Light of the World. But the reason why we started making it is, first of all, we're passionate about Jesus. We're actually a nonprofit ministry called the Salvation Poem Project, and our mission is to craft stories to share Jesus Christ with the world. So it really is just an extension of our core mission and calling as Christian creatives, to make gospel-centered media. And we're passionate about animation, about 2D hand-drawn animation, the old school classic animation that Disney used to do in the 90s and before. And because there have never been any high-quality 2D animated films on the life of Jesus at this level, we thought it was something that should be done. And we wanted to do it from the perspective of a young apostle John, to show it from a point of view that's never been seen before. Because we really wanted to give people the viewpoint of someone who was profoundly changed by Jesus, so that they could have this sort of surrogate experience of being transformed by Jesus and understand why he was so beautiful and what he can do for people now in their lives today.
Amazing. The name of the film is Light of the World, and I like how you sort of mentioned that it is of that 2D animation style that kind of harkens back to the earlier era of Disney cartoons. Everything is 3D and so shaded and glossy now, and it's a different kind of a look, but this is the classic animated style. And so talk a little bit about, you mentioned St. John the Apostle, how
The story is told through his eyes. That's sort of a novel angle or a way to show this. Talk about what inspired that and how that plays out in the film.
Well, you know, stories are mostly about a person's journey to overcome their flaws. And usually a story is about one central flaw that one person is trying to overcome. That's the vast majority of all stories. There's outliers, like 007 doesn't change, right? He's one of those characters who's just like always himself. But Jesus is usually the point of view character of films on the life of Jesus. And it's odd because he has no flaws that he's trying to overcome. He's perfect, right? Morally perfect. Obviously, he changed and grew in stature and in experience in this world when he became a man to die for our sakes. But there's something unique about the point of view of someone who actually was flawed and who, through journeying with Jesus, was able to be set free from those things. And we wanted to tell it from that point of view. The reason why we chose John was we wanted an intimate point of view, someone who was actually close to Jesus. And John was the only disciple who actually was present at the crucifixion, and we knew that we wanted to show that scene, and so it narrowed it down a little bit for us. But the more we dug into it, the more we saw that it was a really unique point of view, because in our research we found that most scholars generally agree that the disciples were pretty young when they were following Jesus, and Jesus himself was in his 30s. And so we know Peter paid the temple tax, but he appears to be the only one who did, and you paid that when you were 20. And so, you know, John is usually considered likely the youngest, and we thought that was a really unique viewpoint to take a young teen and show his journey with Jesus, and we thought that it would really appeal to people and likely was closer to the truth of what happened.
We're talking today with Brian McPherson about the brand-new animated film Light of the World, an animated retelling of Jesus Christ's ministry, death, and resurrection. And of course, no story of Jesus is complete without talking about his miracles. And this is the Miracle Hunter radio show. So talk a little bit about the role of depicting miracles in the film and how that advances the story.
Well, it's interesting because the more that we dug into the disciples' perspectives and even the early Jewish perspective on the Messiah when Jesus was around, it's very likely that most of the disciples expected Jesus to be a military savior. God, throughout the millennia, has proven his word to the prophets through miracles. It's sort of a way of him saying, hey, what this guy is telling you is true. Here, let me do this miracle so that you believe him. And the message that Jesus was trying to bring to people was that the kingdom of God was coming to people, and that the Messiah was here. And so the miracles were to prove that he was trustworthy and that his message was one to be believed. But even many at the time did not believe him. And so it was really interesting to show the miracles being performed and the differing perspectives on what that meant. You know, some of the Pharisees believed, some of them did not. Others became threatened by Jesus because of the miracles he was performing. After he raised Lazarus, you know, people were plotting on how to kill Jesus or kill Lazarus again. So it's just interesting because it kind of cracks open the human nature and shows that Jesus is the dividing line. We all have to decide whether or not we believe him. And it was a lot of fun to tease out those differing perspectives in the animation.
Absolutely. And I think one of the themes that's through this film comes out as the need to trust in God's plan. How does this film frame that idea?
Well, that's really John's entire journey is he going to trust Jesus or not? And really, that's all of our journeys, right? Are we going to trust Jesus and the claims that he's made and the promises that he's made? Are we going to trust that he's enough? Are we going to trust that when he says he'll forgive us, he actually does? Are we going to trust that he is going to bring us back to life in the next life? You know, that's what John is struggling with all throughout. And, you know, when he hears that Jesus is planning on laying his life down instead of conquering the Romans, he's faced with the dilemma. Is he going to trust Jesus, this man he's come to love and believe is the Messiah, or is he going to trust in his old viewpoint of what the Messiah should be? And it's very, very fascinating, because as we look at history, that it seems that's what Judas was grappling with, and what Peter was grappling with, and all the disciples. So, it's really the crux of the entire story.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Brennan McPherson, producer of the brand new film Light of the World, an animated retelling of Christ's life. And of course, the story of Christ's life is incomplete without talking about his death by crucifixion and his resurrection. As a children's film, of course, there's always that challenge. How do you present this violent time in the life of Christ, and how do you make it viewable for children? Talk about that challenge of expressing this very important and essential element in the story of Christ and also making it friendly for children.
Well, we knew that we were not going to shy away from Christ's death. We are people of the blood as Christians. And central to our entire life and existence is the death of Jesus. And it was a gruesome death. He was nailed to a cross. He was scourged. He was abused and beaten. And he was pierced with a spear. And he was, he had a crown of thorns pressed into his scalp, and his beard was ripped out. He was brutalized. And it's important for us to not shy away from that, or pretend that it wasn't brutal, or to dumb it down to the point where it has no emotional weight. God became a man and died for our sakes, and we knew we wanted to tell the truth about that visually as well as emotionally. We also knew that we didn't want to traumatize children. But that's the thing that's so wonderful about animation, is you can tell emotionally gruesome stories in animation in a way that does not traumatize, because you're abstracting it to a certain level and allowing people to grapple with the emotional truths of it without being shocked by the brutality. And so we also knew, just from a practical standpoint, we needed this to be a PG movie, not a PG-13 movie. And so we applied some very tasteful censorship to not showing the worst, most shocking parts of it, but you see him nailed to a cross. You see him brutalized, so that you feel the weight of the price that he paid.
Yeah, and I have to say, for my own self, just watching this film, it's handled absolutely perfectly. Sort of these scenes of suspense and implied violence, without showing everything that needed to be shown or should that could be shown. And I think that it conveyed the emotions, for sure, of the crucifixion and death of our Lord Jesus Christ. So very well done with that presentation of the death of Christ. And so for people who want to see this film is out as of September 5th. Mm-hmm. Tickets are available now. What's the best place people can go to watch and see this film?
Well, if you want to go see it in theaters, we think that'll be the best way to see the film. It really plays extremely well as a theatrical film. And tickets are on sale. It's open right now. Go to lightoftheworld.com and hit the button to get tickets now. And you can find showtimes near you at theaters right where you're at. It's a wide release, so you should have multiple theaters close to where you're at.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Brennan McPherson, the producer of this great new film, Light of the World. Thank you so much for joining us on today's program.
Thank you.
Check this one out, Light of the World, an animated retelling of Jesus Christ's ministry, death, and resurrection. Check this one out, Light of the World, in theaters now. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love answering questions that I get in the email inbox. I've maybe got the strangest email inbox in America, but I also like answering questions in person. And this past week, I was able to speak to the Our Lady of Light Ministries in Cincinnati, Ohio. I spoke at two times there, and there were some amazing questions that came out, and they were fascinating to me, the things that people are thinking about. One of the questions that came up was this one, which is a good one. One of the people from the audience said, "I am a blood relative of a future saint, a blessed, and that blessed needs a miracle for their canonization. If I were to pray to that saint, a future saint, and get a miracle, would the Vatican recognize it given my personal connection?" Well, thanks for that question, and it's a good one, and it's the first time I've ever heard that question, and of course, the answer is that there's no such thing as nepotism when it comes to miracles. It doesn't matter who prays for the miracle, and of course, with every canonization cause, it's very interesting why a person would ever direct their prayers to just one saint. I know I like to joke that, you know, when I'm in trouble, when I need a miracle or need some help, I'm praying to all my friends in heaven, the saints, you know, hoping that someone up there picks up the phone, just if anybody will listen and intercede for me. But it's a little bit of a joke. But I think that, you know, when we talk about canonizations, it must be a miracle and an instantaneous, complete, and lasting cure of a serious condition not liable to go in its own, and there can be no medical treatment that relates to the cure. And perhaps most interestingly is you can only pray to one saint when it comes to the canonization of a potential person or a person. So I think that it's a little bit of a miracle anytime you see the prayers directed just to that one person, and a miracle does happen. And so there's always the question of why did they choose that one person? And sometimes it's somebody from their country or their local area or their religious order, community, connection. There's always a point of connection. And if that point of connection is because they're a blood relative of yours, hey, I think that would definitely fly in the Vatican as a reason to direct your prayers in a case of singular intercession. So thank you for that great, great question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. And for those people who would like to have me answer their questions in person at a speaking event at a parish or a shrine or otherwise, you can send me an email through my website and click on the contact tab. I do talks maybe 20 of these a year, and so you can invite me and maybe I'll be answering questions and giving a talk on Eucharistic miracles or otherwise at some point in your area. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary Project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima on May 13th, or Lourdes February 11th, or Guadalupe December 12th, but believe it or not, there's a different other Marian devotion for each day of the calendar year. Somewhere in the world, they're honoring Mary in a special way, and we're talking about feast days, commemorations of miracles, building of basilicas. Whatever it is, there's each day has a different Marian connection. So for today's date, on September 6th, we've got the icon of the Mother of God of St. Peter of Moscow in Russia in the 14th century. And the story goes that the icon of the Most Holy Theotokos of St. Peter was so called because it was painted by St. Peter, the Metropolitan of Moscow, while he was at the monastery near Volnia. And during a visit to this monastery, St. Peter gifted this icon, and upon the death of St. Maximus, Gerontius took this icon to the patriarch Athanasius. And this journey of Gerontius was delayed, however, by a terrible storm at the sea, and during the storm, Our Lady appeared to him and told the patriarch should pass this to the give it to the painter of the icon. And when he came before Athanasius, he gave the icon to St. Peter and told him that the Virgin foretold this his path. And St. Peter took the icon to Vladimir and placed it in the cathedral there. So that is a Russian Orthodox miracle of Mary. And that is today's 365 Days with Mary devotion. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book, download the free app from the iOS App Store, Or you can go to the Facebook page and join any of the 10,000 other followers who get a different Marian devotion each and every day of the calendar year. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we talk about a miracle happening on the day's date in some year in Christian history. And this is a miracle of Michael, the archangel at Colossae in around the 4th century. The exact date is unknown. And it's remembered annually on September 6th in the Eastern Orthodox and Byzantine liturgical calendars. And this was in Phrygia, which is modern-day Turkey, near Hierapolis, in a place called Colossae, later known as Cronae, meaning plunging, due to its natural feature formed by the miracle. And so the story is that a healing spring appeared. The apostles John and Philip preached the gospel there, and John prophesied that a miraculous spring would emerge, endowed with healing powers through Archangel Michael's intercession. In miracles, a pagan father, whose daughter had been mute from birth, had a dream in which the Archangel Michael instructed him to bring her to this spring. And when the girl drank from this or was immersed in the water, she spoke, and it led to the father, her daughter, and his whole household being baptized. In gratitude, he built a church there. And later pagans tried to destroy this holy site by redirecting a nearby river to flood it. And through the prayers there, devoted Christians, Michael intervened and caused an earthquake-like event. The waters were redirected through a fissure in the rock, saving the church and the spring. And the site's new name, Cronae, reflects this plunging action. So this is somewhat of a double miracle, we might say. That is the miracle of the Archangel Michael at Colossae or Cronae in the 4th century. And that's today's miracle of the day. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We do this every week where we talk about those people on the path to sainthood and try to give you updates on people moving along the pipeline from servant of God to venerable to blessed and to saint. Well, I'm so excited because on September 7th, we have the canonization of the two young Italian saints, Pier Giorgio Frassati and Carlo Acutis. And of course, this is an event that's been bumped a few times. I was in Rome for the canonization of Carlo Acutis in April. And of course, Pope Francis passed away during that time, so they needed to postpone that canonization because there can't be a canonization without a pope, apparently. And also, I was there in August. I had scheduled that to be there for the Pier Giorgio Frassati canonization, and that also got moved by Pope Leo. He combined the two of the two young Italian saints, Pier Giorgio Frassati and Carlo Acutis. He put them together in one canonization on September 7th, 2025. And of course, we know Pier Giorgio as a layman, a young, faithful Catholic who in various lay Catholic associations, he committed himself wholeheartedly to initiatives of social development and charity towards the poor and the sick. And he died struck by a paralysis. And so that was from the canonization website, of course, the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints. And they also talk about Carlo Acutis, who we talk about a lot on this show, who lived from 1991 to 2006. As a young boy, he was deeply devoted to the Virgin Mary, the Eucharist, and developed computer projects on faith-related topics. And he also had extensive volunteer experience with the homeless and in soup kitchens. And he was struck by leukemia, and he died at 15 years old on October 12th, 2006. I consider him to be my patron saint, Carlo Acutis. I'm so excited for this canonization, September 7th. Finally, this will be the first canonization by Pope Leo. And let's take a look at the might-be saint of the day, and this lines up with my television series, They Might Be Saints, which airs every week on EWTN, and also my book, They Might Be Saints, which is available from EWTNReligiousCatalog.com. So for today's date, we have Blessed Olinto Marella, who lived in Italy from 1862 to 2013, and he was born in Palestrina in Italy, and he was one of three children of a wealthy physician who died when Olinto was only 10 years old, and he was educated by his uncle, Archbishop Giuseppe Marella of Palestrina. And he studied in Rome, where he was a classmate of a future pope, John the 23rd. He was ordained in 1904, and he taught seminarians in Chioggia and small children in his parish, and he taught in a number of cities throughout Italy while continuing his studies of history, philosophy, and theology. He was a parish priest in Bologna. He worked with the poor, the homeless, and the outcasts of that city, and he found funds for shelters, homes, and chapels. And he would sit on a stool on the street and preach to all the passers-by against indifference and the suffering of others. And some brother priests objected to his work as being too evangelical, but it had the support of Pope John XXIII. And he died in 1969 in San Lazzaro in Saverna of natural causes, and his body was moved in 1980 to another church in San Lazzaro. And he was declared blessed by Pope Francis, who also had declared him venerable in 2013. 7 years later, he was declared blessed in October 4th, 2020. With one more miracle, he will be known as Saint Olindo Marella. And that's today's Saint of the Day. And for those people who want to check out my series, They Might Be Saints, which airs weekly on EWTN, the newest episode comes out on September 9th, and that is They Might Be Saints, Father Augustus Tolton. And I examine the sainthood cause of the first black priest in American history, Venerable Augustus Tolton, who overcame tremendous challenges both inside and outside the Catholic Church. And that is They Might Be Saints, Father Augustus Tolton, airing on EWTN on September 9th. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Christine Wohar from Frassati USA about the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Well, when it was announced that miracle related that led to the announcement of the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati, that was a big moment for a lot of Catholics around the world, people who are devotees of the young saint, the young Italian man from Italy, whose canonization was announced by Pope Francis in some ways. And then many people, including myself, scheduled a pilgrimage in order to go to Rome in August of this year to celebrate his canonization. And it was to be a big event. Of course, many things transpired, including the death of Pope Francis and the moving of the necessary moving of the canonization of Carlo Acutis, and we all assumed that August would be the canonization of both of the two young Italian men saints. But instead, it was kicked down the field a little bit into September 7th was the new date for the double canonization, where people are still traveling from the United States and all around the world. I was sad to have missed that canonization, but coming right up is the big date. And we're so excited to be joined today by Christine Wohar. She's the Executive Director of Frassati USA and author of the book Finding Frassati. Welcome back to the show today, Christine.
Hi, Michael. That introduction makes me a little bit nervous. It's changed so many times, and to hear you sum it up, I'm thinking, please, let's not have another delay.
Let's not have another delay, but certainly it's crescendoing at this point. We've had a couple of delays, a lot of mystery about what would happen, and here we are with the canonization upon us now. So this is an exciting time for Catholics all around the world, young Catholics and old Catholics and everybody in between. I think so many people are excited about the announcement of sainthood for the saint, Pier Giorgio Frassati. Tell us a little bit about your experience there at Frassati USA with the moving target, the moving dates as we head towards the big canonization date here.
Right. I would say pretty similar to what you said. We had a official canonization pilgrimage planned for quite some time after the exciting announcement. I think it was April of 2024 when we heard that the canonization would happen. And we had pretty much guessed rightly that it would happen during that Jubilee of Young Adults. And then Pope Leo, well, all of the events, who could control the death of Pope Francis and Pope Leo being selected, which has actually made this extra exciting for us that we would have a American-born saint be the one to canonize Pietro Giorgio, but we couldn't change our plans, and we had a wonderful pilgrimage in the footsteps of Pietro Giorgio that, you know, didn't culminate with his canonization, but it was very grace-filled, and now I'm blessed to be able to go back again and for the grand finale here. And also, it's a blessing for me because I would not have been at the canonization of Carlo Acutis, who I think is just a wonderful young saint in the making here. And so to be able to be at both of them is actually, it's like a nice consolation and something I'm really looking forward to.
Wonderful. I think if I were a betting guy and putting a bet on in Las Vegas, I would have said that it would have happened both of them in August together. I thought that was the likely thing, and I was excited to potentially see a double canonization on my pilgrimage there. But I saw zero, so I'm excited for the people who will be there in September as well. And so one of the big things that I think when I talk to people about, you know, all the buzz about this and all the excitement about the moving dates and finally culminating here on September 7th, why are so many people excited about Pier Giorgio Frassati?
Well, I think for those in the Frassati camp, let's say, we've waited a lot longer. It's been 100 years since the death of Pier Giorgio, and he's had some hiccups along the way. And this, you know, the last month or so where we've had these, you know, moving targets for his canonization has, as you said, it's really built it up to this, you know, great crescendo to have it finally happen. But I think Pier Giorgio really models for us the complete picture as a layperson. And so where I see the beauty of the life of Carlo Acutis, the fact that his life was cut so short at 15, it prevented him from experiencing a lot of these more adult issues that Pier Giorgio did experience. Even though he only lived to 24, he was faced with a lot of, you know, difficult scenarios in his life, and I think there's just so much more relatability for, you know, people who have a devotion to both. But I think with Pier Giorgio, there's just so much more to you know, that you can grasp and look to for how can we live, how can we navigate the murky waters of the culture that we're in every day. And I think Pier Giorgio really shows that for us. And so I think people really consider him a friend, a guide through life, and the longing for him to be canonized and make that official is just, it's just increased over time. And so I think there's going, you know, I think it's a worldwide exclamation point because his devotion has spread so far and wide and for such a long period of time. So, yeah, much anticipated and much, it will be much celebrated.
We're talking today with Christine Wohar, the executive director of the Frassati USA organization and author of Finding Frassati. And he has one of the best nicknames or monikers given to him by John Paul II, the Man of the Beatitudes. That's quite a thing. I guess it implies that in his life, he lived out all the Beatitudes in a very real way. And that's something rare that we see. Talk a little bit about how we saw Pier Giorgio live his life in such a way to receive such a name.
I think that's another beautiful thing about Pier Giorgio, because we have so many people who see the rules, you know, the restrictions that the church has with the Ten Commandments. And we always talk about the Ten Commandments spirituality or the Beatitude spirituality. And I think that's really a beautiful thing about Pier Giorgio as the Man of the Eight Beatitudes, because he just really modeled the joyful way of living out your Christian life. And I think when Pope John Paul II, he was Cardinal of Krakow at the time when he gave him that name, and he went to see an exhibit of all of these photos, and just the way Pier Giorgio lived his life in service to the poor, his devotion to the sacraments, his fighting for righteousness and justice in the time when there was the World War I and the rise of fascism, and he was confronted with, you know, so many different aspects of, you know, just challenges for somebody at that age in the world that he lived in. And so I think that his response was just, they called him an explosion of joy. And I think that joyful response to the challenges of life pretty much sum up, you know, the Beatitudes, when they say sometimes, I guess the word can be translated as happy. We say blessed, but it could also be happy. And I think, you know, happy is Pier Giorgio. Happy is the man. He is a peacemaker. He wrote about peace so many times. So if you go through each of the Beatitudes, I think he fits very nicely. He has so many things from his life that you can draw out of and really put into that type of more joyful response to the you know, the demands of living a Catholic life in the world that we live in.
Absolutely. And when we look at the two saints being canonized together, Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati here on September 7th, I think that we have the obvious points of comparison. They're both young men. They're both male. They're both Italian. Beyond that, how can we look at these two together for our modern world and see them as great examples?
Well, the similarities are really. I was just thinking about this the other day because there's something very obvious about the similarities because we all can share in those similarities. I think they overlap so nicely to show that if we do the fundamentals of the faith, that was basically the key to both of these young guys, I think. You know, they had deep Eucharistic lives and had great devotion to Our Lady. For Pier Giorgio, those were the two poles of his existence, we like to say. And it was the same for Carlo. He had such a great devotion to the Blessed Mother, and of course he's known for his Eucharistic devotion. So I think what they really show us is, even 100 years after Pier Giorgio, Carlo was born 90 years after Pier Giorgio, but it was the same thing that made him a saint that makes Pier Giorgio a saint, which was, you know, staying true to the fundamentals of the faith, falling in love with the Eucharistic Lord, and relying on the grace and help of the Blessed Mother in our daily lives. So it's a formula that we all can follow. It's something that's the beauty of both of these, I think, because sometimes we see priests or religious popes, you know, people who had stigmata, visionaries, and so on, and we say, well, I can never do that. But both of these two young men show us, hey, you can live in the demanding world that we live in, both in the turn of the 20th century and the turn of the 21st century. And it's the same formula for holiness. It's possible. I think that's the message that they both give, that holiness is possible. They show us how to do it. It's just something that requires us to make up our minds to be disciplined each day to do those things. So I think that's what they really combine to offer us, you know, tremendous models for how to persevere in the faith. When it's, you know, there's so many things in the culture to draw us away, we don't have to do spectacular things. We just have to practice the fundamentals of the faith as they did. It's just such a beautiful time to have examples like this.
Very well put. And as we wrap up the interview today, of course, Frassati USA, your organization that you're the executive director for, is now front and center. This is the ultimate moment for your organization, the canonization of the saint that you're dedicated to. Tell us briefly about Frassati USA. How can people be involved, and what does this moment mean for you?
To be honest, I actually hardly even can process that this is really happening. So we're just tremendously excited. People will have said to me so many times, well, what are you going to do now? Like as if it just comes to a screeching halt. But the genesis of Frassati USA was to spread the spirituality of Pier Giorgio, that message that holiness is possible. And so now that we have, it's so much easier when somebody is a saint than to try to explain what a blessed is and seeking a miracle. And I think now we can really move forward with just sharing that spirituality with the extra validation, let's say, of Pier Giorgio being a saint, and to really make him more known, you know, more that example will be spread even farther and wide throughout the world. You know, and that's really been the goal, is to promote the spirituality, not to get him canonized, because we really didn't have an official role in that, but to continue this whole movement of popular piety to encourage people to live the faith. And, you know, you can get to the website and find all that information and begin to become, you know, little planters of Frassati seeds in your own vineyards. That's really what we hope will happen now with the, you know, the final raising of Pier Giorgio to the highest heights.
Well, thank you so much, Christine Wohar, Executive Director of Frassati USA and author of the book Finding Frassati. Congratulations on this big moment, this miracle of your favorite saint and the now canonization of your favorite saint going forward. And we wish you the success and the spreading the word on Frassati USA and the message of Pier Giorgio Frassati. Thank you so much for being with us on the program today.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Jesus.
God bless. That was Christine Wohar, Executive Director of Frassati USA and author of Finding Frassati. Check those out. We're all basking in the glow of this canonization that we've been waiting so long for. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Christine Wohar from Frassati USA, talking about the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati, and also Brennan McPherson, the producer of the new film, Light of the World. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.